Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. I'm Chris Lucian, and here is Austin Chadwick, my co-host. And today, we're going to talk to Janine Rio and David Cooper Smith on teaching kids how to program and also learning as a lifelong goal for teachers. So we'll get into a couple of topics, but maybe I would like to have you each kind of introduce yourselves. David, maybe you could start, and then Janine afterwards, and you know, just tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you do, and then we can get into some topics.
Sure. My name is David Cooper Smith, and I've been teaching. This is, I think, my 25th year of teaching in Marina Valley Unified. I have taught everywhere from first grade to eighth grade, and lots of math, science. For the past several years, I've been teaching computer science to those same age groups, all the way from first grade to eighth grade. And yeah, happy to be here. Thanks.
Thank you. Janine, how are you?
Hello. I teach at Valley View High School, and I have been teaching. This is my seventh year. I've been teaching computer science for 5 years. I teach three different courses, two AP classes, computer science principles, computer science A, and then we've written an advanced Java topics course that comes after that. And this has become my passion.
That's fantastic. And I think one really big reason that we wanted to get you on the show was because we've heard that you're mob programming with students. And so I just wanted to ask, how did we get here? How, you know, what caused it to happen? And you know, maybe you can each give me a little bit of history for your classes on that topic.
Well, David started it, so I'm going to let him start it, and then I'll chime in.
Okay. Sure. We started an elective at Palm Middle School, where I teach, in the Palm STEAM Academy. And one of the electives that we decided to do was Android. So we wanted to teach Android. And of course, to do Android back then, we didn't have Kotlin, we just had Java. So I was looking for a curriculum to teach Java with, and I ran across something called Teaching Kids Programming. And I emailed the person who did that. Her name was Lynn Langett. And she replied right away and said, "Hey, my name's Lynn, let's Skype." So I began to kind of correspond with her. And she was working at that time at a place called Hunter. And we got involved with you guys. And you guys, Lynn said, "Hey, how about if we bring some eighth graders down to where I work at Hunter?" And I was like, "Yes, that's like the best field trip I could possibly imagine." And so you kind folks at Hunter let us come down and bring our eighth graders. This is probably 5 years ago. We brought like 30 kids down. They had a blast. It was amazing. And we were introduced to mobbing at that time. We had never seen it before. So we started part of the TKP Teaching Kids Programming curriculum has to do with a little bit of mobbing as part of that, as kind of with what they call a deep dive in her curriculum. And so we started exploring some of that, the whole idea of a driver and a navigator, and we would do it as a class. And so that was our foray into mobbing, and it's just gotten better since then.
Nice. And then Janine, how did your classes get involved?
In working with David, because we have this pathway where he starts them at the Palm STEAM Academy, or sometimes even before that, and then they come to me, and he served as a mentor for me. He's been at it a whole lot longer than I have, has more expertise. And so as he's showing me what he's doing with his kids, of course, I want to bring it into my classroom. And so I was privileged to attend one of those field trips and see mobbing happen. And in education, we have this I do, we do, you do model. And that is how I've learned it. I saw it happen, and I just kind of stood there the whole day and trying to soak it all in because it was way too much. And then we move into basically this year, and we are distance learning, and I'm trying to connect with the kids. And so we've been mobbing every single Wednesday. And so now it's like, I can't imagine not doing this because how it's changed how these kids learn and how we connect.
That's fantastic. And you know, I think that it's really an interesting thing to kind of see it in the collaboration. But I also wanted to comment, the I do, we do, you do is actually really popular in software development culture as well. So it's just kind of a funny thing.
Yeah.
That's both ways. That's wonderful.
I wanted to point out, and then I had a question was, these visits with the students, both in person and then since COVID remotely, have been fantastic. And so I've been privileged to come into kind of this tradition of mobbing with the students and then helping them learn, you know, every year. And it's just been fantastic and a ton of fun. So thank you for being a part of it. And yeah, it seems like it's good learning for us engineers to mob with students, and it sounds like it's been good learning for them as well. The follow-up question I had was, so you were obviously teaching programming in other ways before. What differences did mobbing make when it teaching kids to program?
I'll take that first, I think, because I do it every week now. As I've watched them progress, so it used to be I would model and realize, you know, imagine yourself being in the classroom and we would do code alongs where I would do think aloud and I would just kind of think and then I'd write and I'd ask them some questions and then maybe like we'd, you know, include some variables basically on what the students were saying, but I was still leading all of it. I was still doing most of the thinking, and then I would turn it over to them and they had to create something, basically model it. And so mobbing is that middle step. And it's like, it didn't even click that I had the I do and the you do. Mobbing is the we do, and that's so important. And so watching them as they gained confidence and we would keep reiterating the rules, they were in all different places where it's like, you're allowed to ask questions. So if some student leaves off on their code and next student comes in and they're not sure what to do, okay, ask. So learning how to talk, like they have to learn how to talk about their code and explain what they're thinking. And then it's collaborative. As I, the teacher, learn to stop talking and trust them that they teach each other. And it's become very powerful because they stop being afraid to talk about it and admit where they are in the process.
That's awesome. How about you, David?
Well, I'm not quite as far. Janina has really inspired me to, I'm watching what she's doing at Valley View with my former students. And I'm thinking, wow, I could start that down lower. So I've done a little bit, but I'm not quite where she's at. But I've learned a lot from Janine. Just she had the great idea in our, we have these computer science teacher meetings. And so we have this idea, hey, we always talk about programming. How about if we actually do some programming since we're the computer science teachers? And so Janine's like, let's mob it. And I thought that's perfect. So we took Carol, the dog, you know, like this very, very low level language. And we use that to try to introduce people that have never coded that are like involved in our district with computer science, but haven't really done it. We have people that are involved in cybersecurity stuff that haven't really, really coded, you know, like in any language, maybe a little bit of Python. So it's been really fun. I think most of them have really enjoyed that. And I've taken Janine's model. And I think it takes away a lot of the fear, knowing that you can phone a friend or you can ask for help. And, but ultimately, I'd say my very best experiences with mobbing have been with you guys, have been like not just the field trip days, but Janine and I have both been very privileged to come and join you guys on, I don't know what Hunter calls them, but the days where we can actually work with you guys on your actual code base. Those have been just outstanding in terms of understanding what mobbing looks like in the real software development world. And it's just been so helpful for me, and I know for Janine too, just amazing. And just your software engineers are so welcoming. I mean, you know, we don't know what we're doing in terms of like all this code we're looking at, and you guys bring us right in, and it's just been wonderful. Like in terms of bringing down the anxiety levels, and it's been really great.
Yeah, we've definitely had a lot of fun mobbing with both of you. I think we had a couple cases of that, and mobbing with the students as well. I was just thinking back on some of my experiences remotely in person with the students, and I think the typical pattern I've seen with like middle school students, for example, is they enter the mob and they're like, what is going on? And so there's just kind of this awkward weirdness at first, probably, which is probably like anybody joining a mob for the first time. But then once the driver navigator rotation happens a few times, I've seen the flow pick up pretty quickly, right? And then you start seeing them productive and joking around in a good way. I know there's probably going to be too much of it with middle school students, but it's a good thing that they're getting along and they're interacting with, on the visits with the engineers, asking them questions. And then what I've seen most of the time is after some light facilitation in the beginning, they're kind of off and running and they're solving the problem and mobbing. And what hit me most after one of the sessions was like, I think I see the same interpersonal patterns and good and bad that you see with adults with mob programming, with solving code. And so like, it was pretty fun to see, you know, like, oh, someone was more the talker, you know what I mean? So the facilitator would have to ask others to speak up and, you know, amplify the unheard voice.
It was, what, It was actually really funny because when Janine was talking about learning how to communicate with each other, the students learning to communicate with each other, I was about to say, you know, 30-year industry professionals get into a mob for the first time, and they're having to learn how to communicate with each other too. And so, I think up until, fairly recently, people haven't been used to describing their code out loud and talking to each other. And so it's really funny the parallels that existed there. Austin, you're about to say something. Go ahead.
No, I think that's right. And I think that's so key to learning, right? Is that the doing really helps, the verbalizing out loud, because you have to, it's one thing to understand it, but to verbalize it is a deeper level of understanding. And then I think one thing that can help with middle school students, I would guess, is the shorter timer and rotation helps keep them engaged, right? As opposed to watching someone else do it for a while. And so I guess my follow-up question was, what are some experiences that you've noticed with, if someone out there listening were to try this with middle school or high school students, any experiences you want to share, any tips and tricks, with that unique, age group?
Well, I'll tell you, what it looks like in my classroom. And again, realize we are, I have to have the entire, we'll pick one of my classes. I've got 25 kids in there. And so I have to keep them all together. And I know that ideally that's a terrible number for a mob. So what I've done is I have a little Google timer and we're just doing 2 minutes. I'm so sorry. And then I also have a random name picker. And so we're keeping it at 2 minutes. This is Wednesdays. I've only got 20 minutes total. So I can get through, if I can get through 10 kids. And I've reached the point where one person is now in charge of the timer and picking the name. So there's this whole rule of engagement. And then for the most part, I have to be the one who's typing. And so that's very different from how you would do it in yours, like where everybody can trade off just because we're limited. So be aware of what you have, like technology wise. If I were actually in the classroom, I would actually break them up into better groups. Right now I can't. However, I am so experienced this year that next year I will. It's like, we're gonna have a random name picker so that I can get through as many kids as possible. And yeah, it's only 2 minutes. So if somebody's really having agony, it's only 2 minutes. And you can spend a lot of time going, I'm thinking, because that's allowed. And that's what I tell them, like, that's okay, think aloud. Say, I don't know what that does. Ask a question. So teaching them to do that is part of the process.
Nice. Oh, great. Yeah, I've seen the solo driver mini navigators be a great way to handle remote technology limitations. So that's a great tip.
Sometimes the circumstances kind of dictate the way that it needs to happen, but it still sounds like you get a lot of engagement and learning from that style, and that's totally valid. So you touched on this a little bit earlier, I wanted to kind of get into this topic more about the best ways for introducing students and their teachers to the world of software engineering. I think one, it's really interesting that you are teachers that have brought in computer science in such a way and have reached out to the community. I think for any teachers watching this, it's probably, they would like to probably hear about what it meant for you to reach out to others and how you got involved in that way. And then also just getting the introductions. And I know that you had said that you got computer science teachers together to talk about things in kind of a small community. And I'm a big proponent of creating these small communities and interacting. So is there anything along those lines, just the introductions, getting people started, that you have? I know, David, you reached out to Lynn, in the very beginning. What got you there? How did you get inspired for this?
You're saying, how did I get started with Lynn?
Even before that, somebody is in your shoes back then and wanting to get their students more involved in this way, what would you tell them?
I would say look to your district to find out the key players. If you're a teacher, look in your district to see who are some of the people that are in your district already that are doing this. I think a lot of times we as computer science teachers are kind of like, we exist in silos. We exist you know, just like in a vacuum, kind of on our own. And I don't know, I mean, we are finding more and more as we work with the county, with Riverside County. We just had a competition last night, and we could see kind of some of the schools that showed up. And, so, and like in middle school, we're the only school that showed up. So there's, we can see the need, and we're wondering how to fix the, you know, the same question that you're asking me. How do we build capacity? Because obviously there's a need. Obviously there's jobs that are out there, and we are not, you know, introducing our kids to this. So I would say to the teacher that wants to do something, reach out to the people in your district. And if you don't get any help, reach out to me, you know, dcoopersmith@mvsd.net, email me, reach out to Janine. There are many people who are out there who are interested in helping, and just don't have, you know, enough people asking them for help. And so I think that it's that, you know, just get out of your comfort zone. Like it was a colleague of mine, Gail DiCarlantonio's idea to email Lynn Lang, because I told her about it. She said, email her. And I was like, why would I email her? I mean, I don't even know her. I mean, I did. And she was right. Like within a day, Lynn responded. Yeah. So I was just, yeah, just reach out.
That's phenomenal. All right.
I think I'll second the just reach out. There's been a lot of serendipity since remote times of just reaching out. Like I'll see someone online on Twitter and LinkedIn, and I'll be like, hey, we have some commonalities, and I'll send them a chat message. And then all of a sudden we're like, you know, that there's a few people in a small group thing that me and David are in. And it's like, there's two guys from Canada and someone from UK. And we have this community going, and it just started up because of like, hey, that looks interesting. And you just ask someone a question or ask for help or reach out. And I think remotely, it's amazing what will start happening, who you'll start learning from and interacting with. Yeah. So, what are ways that to introduce students and teachers to the world of software engineering from your perspective? How about you, Janine?
First of all, don't think that you have to be an expert to try it. Mm. I do not come from industry. My first profession was being a mom. I spent a long time being a mom, and it was time to go back to school. And I got a math degree. Well, I'll be a math teacher. That sounds nice and safe. And then I was handed basically, here's computer science principles. It's brand new. You should teach it. So I tell everybody, it's like, don't look at where I am and compare yourself to where I am now, where I've got this incredible pathway and I do all these great things. Compare yourself to where I was when I started, which was, I took some coding classes in college a very, very long time ago. And I might as well have not taken it because I don't remember any of it. I was willing to try. So if there's somebody who's like, that sounds like a good idea. Okay, do it. Just try it. Like try things. And you know, like if you're going to try to reach out to somebody in the community, like David said, just try it. Just send an email, learn a little bit of time for teachers. Like in our district, we have some people at the district level that are doing some amazing things, trying to sometimes convince teachers like there are things for kindergartners to do that will set them up for this. There are great little robot kits or, you know, apps on Chromebooks to get them started. And that's all you got to do. Make it a game. That's okay. Make it fun. And then when they get to fifth grade, they can go join the STEAM Academy over at Palm. And that would be awesome because then they come to me and then I have these kids and I can take them further and understand like this, we have a responsibility because if we don't expose it to them young, they won't have the opportunities later on. So just do something, do hour of code, do something.
Awesome. Yeah, if I could kind of second on to that, I would say we started with clubs. So if you're a teacher, you don't think we're teaching electives now, but it started with clubs. And so we knew that we wanted to have a coding club, and that came out of a robotics club at my elementary school when I was teaching elementary. And exactly what Janine said, I went back to school to take some classes at the community college, but I didn't have a real background in programming, but I was willing to learn with my kids. So if I could stay a day ahead of them, that's all I needed. I didn't worry about that. Like you also kind of have to let your ego go. Like it doesn't matter. Your kid's going to probably be better than you. You know, that's what you want. Don't be afraid of that. You know, if your student knows more than you, that's okay. Involve them in the planning process, in the teaching process, if they want to be involved. All of that is just fun and just embrace it. And I would start with the club.
That's awesome. And you touched on a really interesting point. So, and it's another one of our topics, helping teachers become be lifelong learners, and bring real world skills to the classroom. So, You just touched on it there, kind of, you know, going to school while you're teaching and teaching what you're learning. That's a really interesting concept to me. I think that in software, you know, in the environment that Austin and I work in, where you kind of do dedicated learning time each day, and we're trying to discover all the new things out there. And it sounds like you're doing a little bit of the same, working on your skills and then applying those skills right away. So do you have any more to add to that? And you know, again, what advice would you give to those out there that want to have similar experiences?
I can't think of a better way to be a teacher than to be a student at the same time. I mean, I think I love learning, you know, so I think that's one of the things that makes me a good teacher. But I would take the stuff, I actually ended up going back to school and I got a bachelor's degree in computer science through Oregon State. And I did that, I decided to do it like kind of a slow one class per term. So I still didn't really impact my teaching that much. But what I would do, I was taking a C++ class and I would take the exercises that they were giving me and I gave them to my sixth graders in Scratch. And they figured them out. You know, I was just like, never underestimate your students. They can do way more than you think they can. And so don't go in assuming that they won't be able to do it. Just try it with them and maybe modify it, scaffold it. But yeah, I went back to school. It's been great. I would highly recommend take a class, you know, take a class at the community college. It really helped me tons.
Yeah, similarly, I have chosen to take a couple of classes. I haven't quite gone quite as far as David has, but who knows what'll happen because I keep taking classes as well. But yeah, that first year that I taught computer science principles, I had 4 hours of professional development. Like that's all that was given me. I also was going home at night to learn the next bit. And that was where I totally learned if I would stop trying to be the expert in the room, you know, so often in education, they talk about stop being the sage on the stage, be the guide on the side. And this has enabled me to do that because actually I'm not even the guide on the side. I'm like, hold on, wait up for me. If I would stop holding them back, I realized that first year I held them back because I was so afraid of all the stuff I didn't know. And I had these students that David had the year before. And I was like, clearly they know more coding than I do. And they're trying to explain a string literal to me. And I couldn't figure out what they were talking about. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, whatever, you're going to learn. And they did great. And then now I'm like, I don't know. Why don't you go figure it out? Once they get past my intro course, if they come up to a question, I don't know the answer, I'll be like, oh, why don't you come teach me once you've figured it out? And they do. It is once I got my own ego in check, stop being the person who has to know it all. And just like, I don't know it. I'm setting them up for the real world where, you know what? You're not going to know it. Can you admit you don't know it? And can you go learn it? And it has changed the classes. Like people talk about what they do and I say, I don't know. I can't do what they're doing, but it's great that they do it.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because I think, again, this is another parallel to kind of the transitions that I've seen throughout my career. And I think, you know, historically 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you find a lot more people out there that are just, you know, they have to be the absolute authority on everything and very maybe authority hierarchy based on knowledge and things. And what's interesting is I think the dynamic, especially in the environment that we're in now, it's, you know, hey, this person knows that thing. I don't know that, but I know this thing that they don't know. And we're going to work together to work through it. And we're going to teach each other. And that, you know, sort of homogenization of ideas kind of as you're moving forward, it's really a dynamic thing and it accelerates everyone. And so, you know, if each person out there brings something new to each other and then they collaborate that way. And that's, I think, one of the reasons modeling is so great and such an effective teaching tool, learning tool, you know, in general, so.
Yeah, I think, what was the saying in the sage on the stage?
And the guide on the side.
Guide on the side.
I'm probably not going to be able to not use that going forward, so.
Take it, steal it.
What's funny about that is, I'm not an expert on the history of education, but there was some transition at one point where it was more of like a mobbing type apprenticeship type thing, where it was a small group. Like if you went to go get your master's at some like Cambridge or something, you wouldn't show up at a cattle call class. You would show up and it was a small group and you're with an expert and he would be with you and you kind of live life with him and he guides you and teaches you. And there was another thing that you said, I think both of you said it, which was don't underestimate students. And so I've been doing this for the last couple months now. I've been mobbing with my kids for a couple years. And there's a couple things that are maybe wild about this experiment, which is the age range is big, right? So it's like a 10-year-old, an 8-year-old, and a 6-year-old. And one has a ton of experience, one has a little bit, and one has none. But it's incredible how much they figure out without me helping them at all. Like we're on scratch and I'll be like, oh, what do you want to do? I want to make a video game guy that jumps around and gets this thing. And then you'll see like my, you know, my daughter will start navigating and then the other one will pick it up and then someone will throw in an idea. And I didn't teach them mobbing. They just kind of picked it up and we started doing it. And so I think the ability, like what you said, to try, don't underestimate students, let them learn and just be a guide. It really, really works out well. And so, yeah, try it, go forth, see what happens. Yeah. Chris, do you have any other questions?
Yeah. So when you're talking to other teachers, you know, I think some out there, you know, are, doing things like, the lifelong learning and things along those lines. Is there, and others might not be. So is there like a kind of a community discussion going on around that? Or I guess what's the emphasis for teachers with each other on lifelong learning? Is there one? Is it more ad hoc? I don't know. Just out of curiosity.
I think the challenge is where the focus is. Uh-huh. As educators, there is, I believe, the expectation of lifelong learning because we have professional development sessions all the time, whether they're during the regularly scheduled days or extra times after school or during vacation. The problem is the focus is on how to teach, and there's definitely a need for that. I definitely have met people who know a whole lot of stuff, but they can't get it out of their head and into somebody else's.
Sure.
It's that is the kind of the only thing that is taught. Like they don't learn content. It's as if I went to school a long time ago and I learned some math and now I know all I'll ever need to know about math. And as a mathematician, I'm very protective of my beloved subject, but people will say, yeah, but math doesn't change. Okay, so let's bring it into computer science then. Well, computer science constantly changes. Can we at least accept you also need to know what to teach? Like these things do change. And I don't know if you've noticed, but some of us forget things. So I think that there is an urge to learn. It's just people have forgotten there are other things worth learning. I don't need to go to another session about I do, we do, you do, but I'm probably going to have to attend some. Yeah. Could I also teach them on here is a new programming environment that might work on Chromebooks. Let's actually program something in it. Yeah. Let's see what it can do. I think that if we could spread it to other contexts, that would be nice.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I recently joined a board for designing curriculum at a local university here. And what was really interesting about that was, I think that in the past, I think this is the first time that I'd been asked by a university, what are you, you know, what's something that we should be teaching the students that we're not already coming out of the computer science program. And so I think that they're kind of on the cusp of that, that realization actually at this university is that they realize that the content of the curriculum is slowly needing to be updated based on the new things that are happening in the industry. And so myself and a few other people from different companies, you know, I basically said, you know, who here is doing unit testing across your companies right now? Everybody puts up their hand. And I'm like, do we have any material on unit testing? They said, no. And it's like, does everybody here agree that there needs to be material on unit testing? Everybody says yes. And it's like, okay, now we're moving forward. They're going to be teaching the teachers about unit testing. And so I think, you know, it is really apparent. And I think there's also this statistic that every 5 years, I think 50% of the developers are new, or it's like every 2 years, it's something that Bob Martin says. And so it's like, there's a lot more like entry level developers than there are people with experience each year And it's in a field that's constantly changing. And so I think just that idea of things being very fluid in the education space, I think is going to become more and more prominent over the years. So very cool.
Thank I had at least one more question, yeah. And that was kind of a shift maybe back to the students a little bit. And we were talking about them earlier. What I remember is after the students would visit and mob with us, I think I've heard it every single time where some of the engineers come up to me afterwards and they're like, wow, those are some smart kids. Too bad we can't hire them, you know? So what has been the result for the, you know, the students? What's been the experience like for them as far as mobbing and learning? How has it impacted them, I guess?
Do you have something you want to share, David?
No, I'll go ahead.
Okay. It impacts them on so many different levels. So I told my students in class today that I was going to be here on this podcast, and some of them were in those early eighth grade field trips, and they're just instantly sharing, oh, do you remember when we did this? I remember this, I remember that. It is so impactful for them to see this is what this job looks like. And I do absolutely want to put this plea out to the professional world. You change students if you let them see something besides the four walls of the classroom. That they saw, oh, here's people that they're having a lot of fun. This is a cool place to be. This is great. And then as you get them mobbing and they're doing, they're like, well, this is easy. I can do this. That then when we're in the classroom and, you know, we're dealing with all the fun stuff of it's a school day, I don't want to be here. You know, a desk is hard to sit in. All the little things in their mind just like, but I want that job. And I want to work like that, and I want to do that, and that changes them.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, they love the trip. I mean, it's a, you know, it's varied. Some kids were kind of like, you know, but it's to me, I love that connection to the real world. Like, we don't do that enough at all levels, but especially K-12. So these middle school years are pivotal. Kids, you know, different people, you know, different things are pulling on them at that age, different, you know, things are going on in their lives, and to be exposed to different opportunities, whether it's going to the hospital and working with a doctor, or maybe they're interested in medicine, but a lot of our kids are interested in math and science and computer science. And so gives them the chance to see, the real thing and to work with people that are nice and people they think, wow, I could work with that person, you know? Chris Lucian guy, he's a really nice guy. And or Mr. Chadwick, you know, he's a great guy. And so I think I'm just such a big fan, and I would tell any prospective teachers that might be watching this, just the idea of working with people in your community, wherever you're at, you know, reaching out to some of the companies in your area, if you have any, or maybe not, maybe you need to go online and maybe do something remotely, but working with you guys has been such a huge deal for us. It just makes a huge difference, even if it's just one day a year. We can't wait for our trips coming up in May. And we have kids that want to go back every year. You know, we have a girl, you would talk about Jasmine, who was in the very first year that we ever did it. And she actually went to Berkeley. She's a freshman at UC Berkeley as a computer science major, which is
awesome.
Huge, you know, it just, I mean, it's amazing. And so, yeah, I don't know if I've answered your question, but I just love the interaction with the real world and wish we could do lots more of it.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I think we're coming to time. I just wanted to maybe throw it out to the both of you. If there's anything that you wanted to mention or plug, it sounds like we had a little bit of one just now, which is, you know, organizations out there that have the capability, please start engaging with the community of teachers out there. And then on the other side of that, the teachers out in the community, please start reaching out to the organizations. And maybe is there anything else that you wanted to plug or mention before we sign off?
That was basically it. I the number of times that I personally have tried to reach out to organizations, to companies, and try to tell them, look, I have your future sitting in my classroom. Will you help me prepare them? I have also done the asking, what do you think I should teach my students that they're not going to learn in college? my experiences with you guys has drastically changed my classroom. My classroom is a completely different place. I am a different teacher. And the things that I do because of my experiences with you guys, if I could just convince the rest of the world that they can do that too, you know, companies, what do you want your future employees to look like? Well, then what are you doing to contribute to that? You know, reach out. Amazon has started having some programs where they're actually reaching out and they're going into the classrooms. And if you could see what happens, well, the rest of the companies, you can do it too. You have a local high school. Maybe find one that, you know, has a program or help build a program or just let your engineers take an hour to visit a classroom. You can prepare your future. And there are teachers that are willing to do it. You know, contact me. And I'm not the only teacher. I know lots of others. I can help you get in contact. You can change the future. That's what we do. We'll help us do it the way you want.
Well said.
David, anything to add?
Start young. You know, you can start in elementary, you know, start in elementary. That's what we did. Start them in, you know, first grade, second grade, you know, fourth, fifth grade, start a club, see who's interested. You don't have to know anything about it, but if you just want to help kids who might be interested, do it for that reason. It doesn't have to be your thing. Do it because you know that some of those students are, it's going to be their thing. And then as you start to build capacity, those kids are going to go to middle school and there's going to be a need. You can work with their parents too. That's what we ended up doing. We had some parents that were very vocal with our school district and that helped facilitate the whole process and build the pathway that we have. So yeah, reach out, you know, dcoopersmith@mvosd.net. Email me, I'm fine with that. We're always, Janine, I know as well, we're always open to helping. We also took part in what CSTA, Computer Science Teachers Association, had a hackathon a couple, weekends ago, and Janine and I both were a part of that. That was really cool. We met some people. We met the lead developer for Scratch. Was it John Morris? I can't remember his name. It was the guy from MIT that wrote most of Scratch. I couldn't believe he was on our team. We had a whole afternoon with this guy. That's the greatest, most humble guy. And it was so cool. Big hero of mine. So anyways, that's a little side of the point. Thanks, you guys. Just want to say thank you so much for, you know, doing everything that you guys do and just being who you are. It's amazing to work with you guys.
Oh, I think without you, we wouldn't be doing this either. And so this was just a lot of really great serendipity. And again, thanks to Lynn, who's also been on the show. And there's an episode with Lynn on it. Check it out. She's also been really a key portion of this as well.
Sure.
With that, I'll just say, you know, if you know any teachers out there, share this episode with them. If you know anybody who, you know, is just trying to teach kids programming at all, please share this episode with them. And be sure to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Janine. Thanks, David, for being on the show. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for having us. Bye.